Thank you very much, Volker. Would you like me to do a roll call for you?
Yes, just to once again welcome everyone in the name of both my co-chair, David Cate, and myself. Very good time today, whatever it is at your place, to all of you. And I would like to start with Glenn doing a roll call indeed. Thank you, Glenn.
Thank you very much, Volker. If you could just answer that you are on the call. Keith Strachan?
Here.
Donna Austin?
Here.
Rooms Kuhn?
Here.
James Bladel?
I am here, thank you.
Jennifer Standiford?
Here, present.
Volker Grimann?
Present.
Valerie Tan? I see Valerie is in the Adobe Connect room. Phil Corwin?
Present.
Susan Kawaguchi?
Here.
Paul McGrady, we are dialing out to Paul McGrady.
I'm here now, thank you.
Oh, good, thanks, Paul. Heather Forrest?
Here, thank you.
Tony Harris?
I'm here.
Wolf Ulrich Knoben?
Here.
Maria Marcel?
Here.
Amma El Sadar?
Present.
David Cake?
Present.
Ed Morris is absent and he has given his proxy to Maria Marcel. And Stephanie Millen is absent and she has given her proxy to Stephanie Perrin. Stephanie, are you on the line? I do not see Stephanie on the line nor in the Adobe Connect room, so she'll probably be late. Jules Helsingers?
Here.
Carlos Gutierrez? Carlos?
I'm here, thank you.
Thank you, Carlos. Olivier Crapin-Leblanc?
Present.
And Patrick Miles, our CCNSO liaison, is absent, sent his apologies. Mason Cole, the GNSO liaison to the GAC, is also absent and sent his apologies. And for staff, we have David Olive, Marika Kronisch, Julie Headland, Mary Wong, Barry Cobb, Lars Hoffman, Steve Chan, and myself, Glenda Saint-Jacques. Have I left off anyone? And I see we have Steve Del Bianco on the call, who is very kindly joining us for a item on the agenda with the update for the CCWG Accountability Working Group. And we also have Margie Milam from staff on the call as well. Thank you very much, Volker. And over to you with just a quick reminder to people to please say their name before talking for transcription purposes. Thank you.
Thank you, Glenn, and to show you that I've listened, my name is Volker Grimann, and I would like again to welcome you all. First that we have on the agenda is the administrative items, and I would like to ask if there are any updates to the statements of interests of any of the councillors. I've seen nothing on the list. Hearing none, I move to the next. You have all been sent the current agenda. The agenda is also posted on the right side of your Adobe chat. We already have two items that are going to be added to any other business, which is the meeting calendar for the next year and the CWG stewardship letter with regard to oversight of implementation. Is there anything anyone else would like to add to any other business at this time?
This is Jules speaking. I would possibly like to add just a sort of quick question about the DNS Entrepreneurship Center that I already asked over email.
All right, I will hand that over to you at that stage. Let me just make a quick note. Here we go. Okay. Hearing nothing at this time, I would like to remind everyone that once we get to the topic, we can, of course, amend the agenda there as well and raise any other business topics at that stage as well. I would like now to note the status of the minutes for the previous council meetings. They have been sent around by Jen, and unless there's any objections to the content of those minutes, I would like to move to approve them. Hearing no objections, I would assume that the council approves the previous council's council meeting minutes at this time. They will be posted as approved as soon as possible on the GMSO webpage. As opening remarks go, we have to review the topics that are on our agenda today, and of course our project and action items list. The project list is intended as a brief overview of things that are in the pipeline for GMSO work, i.e. upcoming things. This is especially the issue identification and the issue scoping issues, as well as the initiation. Then, of course, the ongoing working groups should have all received a list of what's currently ongoing in working groups there. For council deliberations, we have currently none on the table, and one item that we've passed on to the board, which is now waiting for a vote of the board. And finally, there's the implementation stage, where a couple of working group outputs are now waiting for implementation. Does anyone have any comments to any work going on, upcoming or past, with any questions to that? Then I would also like to refer that to any other business. Hearing none, I move on to the action items list. These, of course, are items that have been arising from previous meetings that have been on our agenda and that need work going forward. First on this is the meeting planning for the Marrakesh meeting. Historically, the meeting planning has always been handled by the co-chairs of the council. However, due to the specific situation that we had at the last meeting, where no new chair was elected and the co-chairs are only commissarily in position for a short while, we have the as responsible council members on our list, Amr and Susan, whom I would like to thank for volunteering for this. Just briefly touching on what this entails, the planning for the meeting mainly involves working with ICANN staff on organizing the sessions that we as GMSO Council hold, both the weekend sessions and the Wednesday and Thursday sessions, and any other sessions that we have with parts of the community, setting up an agenda and liaising with those groups to get an agenda settled with everyone that we're supposed to meet and that wants to meet with us. Staff will probably be reaching out to you as usual a while before the meeting starts. We still have a little bit of time. I expect the planning stage to start in earnest in January. But of course, with regards to the planning, it's also helpful to have the feedback on the previous council session, and there has been a questionnaire sent to all councillors and community members that would be helpful if you could fill that out, because that helps the council members that are working on the agenda to be informed of any changes that are required or requested by parts of the community, of improvements or things that went very well. I hear some noise in the background. I would like to remind everyone to mute their microphones if they're not speaking. Thank you very much. Next on our action items list is the CWG on enhancing ICANN accountability. It's This should be the CCGOG, I think. It's also item 9 of our agenda. And there has been a new timeline posted just under 2 hours ago. But we'll be hearing more on that later on down, on the agenda. Then we have as item the question of whether we should have a liaison with the ASSEC or the ASSEC should have a liaison on the GNSO. This has been headed by Jonathan Robinson, and we will probably have to have a new council lead for that. It's currently on hold for this reason. The next is the voting thresholds issues for the SEI. It's also a topic that's on hold. It has been led by our three and Alan Greenberg. We'll therefore need also new responsible council members once we decide to move on with this. This is not the topic that's on motion 5 of the agenda today, but rather a question of implementation changes of adopted PDP recommendations for council review and the voting thresholds needed for that. The SEI, of course, being the standing committee for GNSO improvement and implementation, i.e. The committee that helps us improve our processes. The next topic on our action items list is the outstanding IGO, INGO PDP recommendations issue, which was headed by Thomas Rickert, who has also left the council. In that, we have received a letter from Shireen Shelby, and we were notified that the GPC plans to talk further about with the GAC and the IGOs at ICANN 52. And that sounds outdated. Marika, could you give me a brief update on that? Or Mary, I think Mary is the staff responsible. Sorry.
Volker, this is Mary, and hello, everybody. So you're talking about the outstanding IGO PDP, the original one, and I think this action item has been on this list for some time, and currently, we are not talking about the curative rights issue, which is the subject of an ongoing PDP, and one of our councillors, Phil Corwin, is a co-chair of that group. This one, therefore, is dependent from the council's point of view on progress that you can be notified of by the board, because that is something that Chris Despain, as you may recall, those who are on the council, is leading from the board side. At the time, there was the NGPC. And so at the moment, the council is on hold, essentially, following some of the discussions that are referenced in this action items list.
Thank you. Then we should probably update this, the notes and the status of that in our action item, just to be sure that they're up to date and they notify us of work that has to be done once we get off hold again.
Will do, Volker.
Thank you. Next on our agenda is the review of the role of the GNSO liaison to the GAC. As you know, the GNSO Council has appointed Mason Cole to act as a liaison to the GAC and therefore smooth the ways of the flow of information between the GAC and the GNSO. This role should be reviewed by the GAC GNSO consultation group, which regularly meets with various members from both the GAC and the council, as you well know. Next, we have the collaboration with the IETF, and while it says complete with a question mark, I received an email from David Cake, who wanted to make a brief comment on that, because as I learned, it's not quite completed yet. There's still work ongoing here.
Volker, I wanted to comment on the previous one.
Can we do that in any other business? Unless you would like to comment right now. Well, I don't mind, so just go ahead, Carlos.
Well, I don't mind, so just go ahead, Carlos.
Sorry, can you repeat, Volker?
Yes, please go ahead, Carlos.
Yeah, Yes, relating to the GNSO GAC working group, I just wanted to remind you that we have a call next week, next Monday, if I'm right, and so far the chair of the GNSO has been very active in this group, so his role was very important, and I just want to remind the new chair and co-chairs that we have this call. It would be very important to introduce the new leadership of the GNSO next Monday. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carlos. However, I'm currently considering the timeline for the vote, and depending on what time this call takes place, we may not have confirmation of the next chair at that time. Glenn, could you give us just a quick reminder at what time the voting ends on Monday? Or as Glenn's muted, Marika?
Sorry, here I am. The voting will end at 23:59 UTC.
Okay, that will probably mean that the new chair is not yet in office at that time, so that would mean that both David and I will have to join the call and make a note of that. Thank you very much, Carlos, for raising that. David, you wanted to say something on the next topic?
Yes, just very briefly. I think the issues we're considering at the IATF were not fully described in this action item. In particular, was also following RFC 6761 process, which is to create special purpose, basically put TLDs on the special purpose reserved list. This process is still very much ongoing. I think it's one that the GNSO needs to at least be aware of until it's sure we do not, which is to say because it deals with potential TLDs, and in at least one case a TLD that has actually been applied for but not delegated. So the current status of that is that the IATF have sort of got a working group have sort of a problem statement. That problem statement clearly includes some issues like registry and registrar impact that may fall into the GNSO sort of remit. So I'm just going to say I don't consider that completed. We're still following it. I'm happy to continue following that for the council and reporting to the council as things happen.
Thank you, David. We will make a note of that and keep that topic open. Next on our list is the Global Public Interest Framework, where we're still waiting for an update on the research that has been undertaken on that topic that will be provided at a later time, just to notify that this is still ongoing. And next we have the GNSO operator procedures. As you know, we will have to select the board seat number 13 at a time very short in the future, and we will have to be clear on the process for that. Also, work in progress still on our list. The topic of new GTLD auction proceeds has been completed. As far as the council goes, it's now in public comment, and all are encouraged to provide input there. Next, we have the data and metrics for policymaking, and here we need staff to update us on the operating procedures following the adoption of the final report that we had recently. Next is one topic that we have on the agenda today. We have a motion on the agenda, so I will defer to that topic point there, the next generation GTLD RDS to replace who is PDP, and we are currently reviewing the motion and hopefully voting on it today. The SCI liaison topic has also been completed. We have confirmed Amr as the new GNSO liaison to the SCI. Then we have on our list the request from the ICANN board concerning possible policy work on the replacement insurance. We've discussed this topic during our last meeting. We have a draft response currently being circulated on the list, and of course, as usual, all councillors are encouraged to comment on that before we finalize and send it out. Similarly, we have a request from the ICANN board concerning possible policy work on the exclusive registry access to generic strings. There's a draft response there as well, currently circulating on the list. There have been a couple of comments here received that will be incorporated into the next draft, which should be published somewhere sometime this week, and we expect to be sending this out shortly afterwards as well. Next topic is the topic which I have taken the lead for the GNCO Council as well, the new ICANN meeting strategy. There has not been as much update as I hope there will be, and I hope to be able to raise this later today as well, just to make sure that there will be progress before Marrakesh happens. Finally, the thanks to the outgoing councillors has been taken care of at the last meeting. However, certain councillors were not there to receive their gifts. It's sent out. We get rid of that sound. Thank you. This concludes the summary of the action items list. Does anybody have any comments or something to add that was left off accidentally or that should be mentioned at this time? Hearing nothing, we move to item 3 on the agenda, which is the consent agenda. I'm not sure that I will be able to complete that in 0 minutes because speaking right now. Oh. Yes, please. I heard a comment.
Volker, this is Marika. There are several hands up.
Oh, I didn't see those. Sorry for that. I wasn't watching the Adobe as I should have. Yes, David, please. Going to Paul. Paul McGrady.
Hi, Volker. Thank you. This is Paul McGrady. For the Marrakesh meeting planning, one of the topics that came up in our meeting in Dublin was seeking information about the security situation. Are we going to follow up on that? And if so, would that be under the remit of the Marrakesh meeting planning volunteers, or are we going to drop that topic?
Thank you, Paul. Actually, this is item 10 on our agenda today, where we will receive a brief update from, I think, Nick Tommaso on the security update, on the security situation at all the upcoming meetings.
Thank you. Sorry about that. I didn't see that.
No problem. James is next. James Bladel.
Hi, thanks, Volker. James speaking, and I just wanted to go back a little bit here in the action list to the item, and I suppose this question is more appropriately directed to David. We have a note here about collaboration with the IETF, and perhaps this, it's marked as completed, and I think that perhaps this particular, the underlying issue that prompted this particular action item is completed, but I'm just looking for clarity. I'm hoping that that is an ongoing relationship or interaction that we will continue to build on, because I'm very concerned about some of the technical and operational developments that are coming out of the IETF that had the potential to circumvent policy discussions that are currently underway or anticipated to be underway here at ICANN. So I just want to maybe put a marker down that completed may give a false sense of security where that particular action item. I think it's going to be completed and ongoing. And I just wonder if David had any comments on that, or maybe I'm reading too much into just the way it's presented. Thank you.
Thank you, James. James, David already made a couple of comments during the mention of that topic on our action list, mentioning that it was not completed and that's something that we should have an eye on. And I would suggest that we receive an update on the current status at some later time during the next meetings. David, would you like to add something at this stage?
Yeah, I just wanted to say there are a couple of issues to do with the IATF that are currently of interest. I specifically mentioned that the item as described does not include the work around a process to do with RFC 6761, so what they're calling the IATF REC 6761 BIS, but which I'm definitely following and I definitely think is of interest to the Council, but I do understand that, yes, there are also some technical issues related to new directory services, some of which may get into area close to policy. I believe there may be some ongoing work to do with best practices and so on. I would be very interested to hear specific items of concern to councillors and will be, where I'm not following that personally, arrange for someone to brief council. There are a number of ICANN people involved in IATF processes, obviously enough. So, James, if you want to shoot me a message on specific issues and I'll get back to council on and make sure that those are monitored.
Okay. Thank you, David. And just to sign off on this point, Volker, I do appreciate the update, and I apologize if I wasn't unclear on some of your comments that it was still open. And Marika has posted my exact thoughts in the chat, which is that we should probably consider whether or not there needs to be a formal liaison with the IETF, or either a permanent or on an interim basis until we can sort through some of these issues, because I don't see them going away or dialing down anytime in the near future. Thank you.
Of course, there are existing sort of informal liaisons, and there's the technical liaison group and so on, or technical liaisons to the board, but it's worth considering whether, as the GNSO, we need to have some sort of process in place. We could, and that's probably an interesting thing to schedule a discussion on at some later point. Thanks.
Thank you. I would propose that we make a note of this discussion and amend our action items list just to make sure that we are aware that there's this work going on and that we as a council should monitor this more closely to see how it impacts our work and how it may be in contrast to our work on conflict even. So that's something that we should put on our action items list just as a watch item. And then we have in the queue Philip Corwin, please. Philip, go ahead, Phil.
Yes, good morning, Philip here. Just briefly, and following up on Paul's remarks, I was the one who raised the security issue during the Dublin meeting. Someone, I forget who, responded, we shouldn't be singling out North Africa, and unfortunately, the events a few days ago in Paris bear that out. I think I'll save later remarks until we get the briefing from Nick, but I understand it would be very unfortunate if the openness of ICANN meetings is in some way impacted by security procedures, but there are no visible security measures now, and we're a very inviting and soft target, and taking some reasonable steps would be better than having some terrible event happen. So let's hear what Nick has to say, and I'll save further remarks for later. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. I think we're all looking forward to that topic on our agenda, Beth, because it's, of course, of high interest. Okay, Phil, I assume that's the old hand. Okay, then I would like to move on. Having nothing on the consent agenda, we will skip this at this time and come directly to the item 4, 5, and 6, which is the votes on the motions. For this topic, I would like to hand over the rod of power, or whatever you call it, to my co-chair, David Cake. Please go ahead, David.
Hello. So
yes,
we'll move. people hear me?
Perfectly fine.
Yes. So I'll be leading us through the motions, and the first item motion we have, item 4, is adoption of the charter for the PDP Working Group on Next Generation GTLD Registration Directory Services to replace WHOIS. Quite a few amendments and that have been mentioned, and so there may be a fair bit of discussion, but I'd like to start by asking Susan to present the motion.
Thanks, David. As you all know, we discussed this in length last meeting and decided to defer to this meeting. There has been some discussion with the registrar group, and Amr also has proposed, Carlos and Amr has also proposed some comments and revisions, amendments. The amended motion here reflects a slight change that I made to the amendment a couple of weeks ago, and also Carlos's amendments. It doesn't reflect Amr and the registrar group, Jen Gore, put forward some comments. So I can read it through and then we can discuss, or should we just start the discussion?
Well, let's ask if either of those groups want to propose an amendment. Does anyone want to bring up an amendment to this motion?
James has his hand up.
We have.
Hi, thanks. James speaking, and I would note that Amr raised his hand or verbally in the chat here, so I will defer to Amr and just put myself behind him, I think. Thanks.
Okay, then. Amr, you have the floor.
Okay. Thank you, David, and thanks, James. I think I've said pretty much everything I wanted to in the email I sent regarding what I would like to see in terms of an amendment to the motion and also to the charter itself. And it's basically one bullet, which may also require some changes to the diagram in the charter, but basically to include a rights impact assessment, similar to other assessments that are taking place, to perhaps identify what is required in the first phase of the PDP, and then sort of this further, more detailed discussion in the second phase when the substantive issues are coming up. And then perhaps guidelines on implementation in the third one, and considering the chunking or the phases in this PDP that are taking place, and the fact that it's a very iterative process and changes will be taking place across different phases that will require tracking back to some of the work that's already been done. I think it would be helpful to also address the risk assessment. The rights assessment across these different phases and make changes as needed to sort of avoid delaying this in the process and requiring that a lot of work that has already been done to be revised at a late stage. I will note, as I did in the email, that this was brought up at many stages during the discussion. First, during the joint group between the ICANN board and members of the council, which Avery was on, Avery brought it up several times here on council, and the NCSG submitted a comment on this, which was also included in the staff report on the public comments to the preliminary issues reports of this PDP. But the way I see it, it wasn't the change, according to what we had been recommending, is not very clear in the charter. I appreciate Marika's response to my email saying that this might be included as part of the risk assessment. My concern is that if this is not clearly indicated as something that is within scope, and indeed not just within scope, but a requirement to the PDP working group, I am concerned that once the working group is convened, that there may be some resistance to or some disagreements, let's say, on whether this is in or out of scope of the PDP working group. I also, just to quickly respond to Carlos's response, although this is a board-initiated PDP, the PDP working group is still chartered by the JNSO Council, and although the JNSO Council does not need to approve the final issues report, we do need to approve the charter for the PDP working group, which is what this motion is all about. So I would prefer that this change be made sooner rather than later. I don't see any need to delay it to when the working group actually convenes and then follow up with them and make this sort of a request from the working group to amend the charter. And another concern I have is that if this is not clearly within scope and not picked up in the way at least that the NCSG would like it to be done during the work of the PDP working group, I'm concerned that this will lead to difficulties in achieving consensus years down the line, I guess, when the work is done. So I think it would be a good idea to include this now, make it clear that the PDP working group members need to discuss it and reach some sort of conclusion and consensus on it. Thank you.
All right. Does anyone else wish to respond? Sorry, I don't know if Carlos or Volker was next in line.
Thanks, David. I think James was before me, but...
My understanding is James wanted to respond to it. James, do you wish to respond to this item, or do you have a separate point to discuss?
Little column A, little column B.
Can I ask you to respond to this item first?
I'm sorry, I'm getting some very painful feedback.
Yes, sorry, I got some vocal feedback. Can I ask you just to respond to Amma now, and I'll call on you again later.
Okay, thanks. Well, this is James speaking for the record, and the registrars have also had some discussions about the motion. I think our concerns while the substance of our concerns are different than the ones raised by or I think procedurally we are also in somewhat of a similar situation, which is that we understand that this needs to go forward. We asked for and were graciously granted a deferral at the last council meeting to further consider this and this draft charter. And we believe that it is at least to our examination, it doesn't fully address some of the concerns that we have raised earlier in the process. And our concern is that if we go forward on this now, the PDP working group will begin its work without fully taking on board those comments. However, we don't want to be seen either optically or in reality of trying to introduce 11th hour changes. We're simply continuing to reflect back to changes that were previously introduced. And I think that, you know, just looking for some assurances that will be taken on board by the working group once it convenes. So I think I have a path forward, proposed path forward, and I have been having some conversations with Susan as the counselor that proposed this motion as whether or not they would be taken as friendly. But I think that if we could include some specific instructions in this motion that the working group, when it is formed, convenes when it's convened, explicitly reaches out to all stakeholder groups and all constituencies for additional feedback on any items that it considers, whether or not they consider them to be in or out of scope of their charter. I think that would be, perhaps a way around some of these concerns. Because to Amr's point, we don't want to be several years down the road with a lot of time and effort invested into this process and think we should have spent maybe a little bit more effort now at the front end, getting some of these loose threads tied up before we charge ahead. So I haven't drafted any specific language yet, and I note that Jen Standiford had also posted a list of the substance of our concerns to the council list, which is something that we are happy to discuss or happy to just submit to the for the consideration of the working group. But I think that procedurally it's very similar to what Amr is discussing, is that we want to ensure that some of these items that were raised several months ago are in fact captured effectively in the charter. Thanks.
Don't know if Volker or Carlos had their hand up first. Which one of you would like to respond?
Yes, Volker speaking. Just building on what James said. Our main concern was that when we read the final report and the staff analysis of the public comments, there was language that said no comments suggesting additional questions that should be explored on this PDP was included, and we found that some of the concerns that we raised that we feel essential for a successful completion of the work and of various phases that are ongoing in the work has been missing. And while the charter says that the working group shall consider at a minimum certain points, we think that the exclusion of some of the points that we raised would be detrimental and would maybe lead to a second rating of these concerns, where we think that these concerns should be front and center of the discussions because they deal with important things such as technical feasibility, jurisdiction, redundancy, and stress testing, i.e. the operational aspects and the legal aspects of this work that's going on, that, of the result of this work that's going to start very soon. Therefore, we would like to, we originally considered amending the charter, but at this stage we decided that it's better that we raise these concerns in a form that the working group would be instructed to reach out to the stakeholder groups and constituencies and get their feedback to see what other points that are not included under this at a discuss at a minimum header would be important to discuss at what stage, and therefore we propose, as James suggested, amending the motion that such a input possibility would be given to the stakeholder groups and constituencies at a time when the working group is constituted.
Thank you, Volker. Carl.
Thank you, Dave. This is Carlos. For the record, I agree with the comments by Amr and by James. I came very late to this issue, only in the last meeting in Dublin, and I was just trying to find a good solution. Nevertheless, the last 2 days I spent some time swallowing the draft charter, and I think it makes a lot of sense to ask the working group to revise this complex procedure that the charter is proposing. You know, there are three steps or three major blocks with some feedback loops, etc., etc. They are explained very well graphically, but my guess is once you sit down and start working, then a lot of small or bigger issues may arise, and I think it could be drafted that there should.
Okay. Was anyone else getting some dropouts on the audio, Dan?
Yes. It's going to.
Yes, could I just.
Sorry, I don't know what happened. Somebody turn off my microphone.
Okay.
Did my comments come through? Or no?
some did. I'm not sure. Do you want to repeat your last sentence or two?
No, I think it makes a lot of sense and can be easily drafted a further point in the motion to give leeway to the working group to revise all this complex procedure that is proposed in the draft charter. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Carlos. Susan?
I agree that we should take the time to really look at all the issues. This is not that any PDP is simple, but this one is extremely aggressive, in my opinion, in what we're proposing to change. So I do have some language that we could use to amend. I'm trying to see if I can get it posted in the room, and for some reason I'm not being able to type. 2 seconds here. I'm having a technical issue with just copying pasting this morning. I don't know why. Yeah, it's it looks like Marika's going to propose some language for me. I can't seem to copy it into the box, but this language that's on that Marika's posting now is part of the resolved clause. The working group, when convened, is instructed to reach out to all SG/Cs for additional feedback back on any items that it believes should be considered that may not have been specifically called out in the charter. Should the working group be of the view that after the review of this feedback, changes need to be made to the charter to address these, the working group is expected to come back to the council with proposed changes to the charter for the council to consider. Does that language help us move forward and ensure that the charter is dealt with in the detail that it needs to be dealt with? And I do think that, you know, we could propose amendments now as the council, but I'm not sure that it would reflect the whole working group when we really start looking into all the issues. I do think that the work that I participated with the board GNSO group did think that most of these things that have been called out were considered. But if we need more detail, and clarity is always better for any working group. So I am open to most amendments to this, as long as they provide equal feedback from all the SGs and Cs.
Okay. Thank you for that. And James, I think you're next in the queue.
Thanks, David. James speaking, and thank you, Susan, and Marika for drafting on the fly here. I think just from the perspective of the registrars that submitted these concerns, that this is good, and this captures our concerns, this amendment. I think that in that case, the document that spells out those concerns should perhaps be considered a preview of what the registrars intend to submit as part of this effort to the working group, and the council got an early peek at that. And like Susan, and I think something that hopefully has come through this entire process, is that this is not just to amplify something that she said at the end there, we want to make sure that all SGs and all constituencies have an opportunity to do this because this is an extremely complex and long-term, long life cycle PDP, and it's important that we get these things on the table early, even if it looks like a speed bump here at the beginning. I think it saves us months and months of work at the end. Thank you.
Thank you, James. Amar.
Thanks, David. And thank you, Susan and Marika. I certainly agree with Susan that the more clarity and we have in the charter, the better. However, I'm not very I'm not very fond of this solution to deferring this to the working group. For one thing, if we are seeking stakeholder group input, stakeholder group and constituency input to this, like I said, the NCSG has already formally submitted its feedback to this and asked that this be included in the charter. But it hasn't been, at least not to our satisfaction. And I do note that there may be some language that may suggest or indicate what we would like to see in scope of the PDP is actually in scope. But from our perspective, and again, this is a matter of clarity. It is not clear enough. It is not explicitly stated, and there may still be some argument as to whether it is in or out of scope. But having submitted this feedback to the preliminary issues report and it already being included in the staff report on the public comments, I see no reason why this can't be why the rights impact assessment can't be included at this stage and why it needs to be deferred to a discussion amongst the working group members. From a process perspective, the NCSG has already followed the guidelines, and we've already submitted a public comment. This is not a new issue. It's been brought up from the very get-go when the board and council members were working together on the framework for this PDP. So I would personally prefer this to be included in the charter at this time and have an amendment just reflecting that this change was made. Thank you.
Marilia.
Thank you very much, David. This is Marilia speaking. I won't be very long. So I think that this is a very constructive and elegant solution, and the things that we are not capturing right now with regards to the charter can be captured further down the process when we have more clarity. So I do support that this language is included in the motion. I just would like to second the point that was made by Amr before, because I think that one issue has already been identified with a very clear and defined scope, which is the request for the inclusion of a rights assessment. I think that this is something that the operational procedure calls upon when we are developing the issue report, and also when we are delivering the first version of the final report. And if we look at the process of this particular PDP, the first phase may have a very considerable impact even on the existence of a second and third phase. So I think that the earlier that we start this kind of assessment, the better and more sound the process will be. And as was mentioned before, the more chances we will have to be on the same page and to move forward with approval smoothly. So I think that it isn't an innovation. It is something that is already foreseen in the process. And including right now, I think that would give us the possibility to fully support the motion and move forward. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. So I think Volker and Stephanie are still in the queue, and after that point I think we should pause and work out exactly what the sort of status of the at least a couple of amendments that are flying about are. So, Volker.
Thank you. Volker Kreyer speaking. For me, from what I've heard from our stakeholders, is that this language as proposed here would be sufficient to address our concerns at this stage. Note that we're not proposing to extend the charter into infinity, i.e. have everything about who is that could be considered that it has no time, no real effect should be, that should be included. We were clearly referring in our comments and our reason for deferral and also the document that we submitted to items that have been raised in the public comment that we felt were underrepresented or ignored or forgotten in the charter after the public comment closed. So it might be helpful to limit it to comments that have been raised at this stage prior, and then they can be reconfirmed by the working group. But as it stands, we can live with this as well.
Thank you, Volker. And Stephanie.
Thank you, Stephanie Perrin, for the record.
I wanted to join my colleagues, Amar and Marilia, in reinforcing the need for this rights impact assessment as an ongoing process in the work of the PDP, rather than having it consigned to a one-shot risk assessment. That is not to say that we don't want the impact on rights to be included in the risk assessment. Can you hear me?
We can, but we can also hear someone's phone.
Okay, I should carry on. We certainly do want rights to be considered in part of the risk assessment, but the NCSG in particular believes that we've been at this who is problem for quite a long time, as noted in the issues report, and it gives an excellent summary. Failure to analyze and properly measure the impact on rights is what has led us, in our belief, to impasse on many occasions before. So I think this is time well spent in doing an ongoing assessment as we go through this very complex PDP. It's going to save time in the end and possible stalemate. Thank you.
Right. Okay. So thank you, Stephanie. And now I'd like to, at this moment, sort of work out where we are procedurally. Now, my understanding is that Susan has proposed an amendment to her motion, which I don't think. Do we have language, specific language for that?
So, Marika copied in the language to the resolve clause. It's three.
Right, yeah. Okay. So three. And my understanding of Volker has asked to consider that language be narrowed slightly. I'm not sure about and my understanding is that that language proposed there in the resolve clause definitely addresses the concerns of the registrars. First, perhaps we could just address this question of whether or not the slightly narrowed language Volker has suggested should be added. Does anyone have any comments on that? Which is that Volker's suggested that we narrow it to items that have been already raised in the public comment, rather than introducing any new items that have not yet been mentioned. Do we have any comment, some clarity on that issue? Amo, did you want to speak to that issue?
Yes, I did, David. This is Amar. I'm using the audio on the Adobe Connect room. I was dropped off a call. I just want to make sure, for one thing, that you can all hear me.
Yes.
Okay, great. I think that's a good suggestion, including whatever's been raised in the public comment. I would probably add that to Resolve Clause 1, where it says the GNSO Council approves the draft charter proposed in the final issues report, and maybe perhaps add there as well as comments submitted during the public comment period on the preliminary issues report that are not reflected in the charter. And then maybe the changes could be made, but if we do include just a reference to the comments that have already been submitted in the resolve clause, and I think that would belong in resolve clause 1, I think that would certainly satisfy me. Thanks.
Okay. How do the Volker? What do you? Could you? How do you feel?
Thank you, David. Volker speaking. Just as a clarification, this is The suggestion, I'm not sure even if it's a suggested amendment, it's just an idea of how to improve the language a little bit to make, to narrow it down a bit to have not the sky as the limit, but rather the public comment, that the public comments that were received, and therefore prevent any issue creep at a later stage. I think we were all very clear that we want to have this as a functional working group, and opening this door too wide, just as a consideration, may be a problem down the road if new interests are being introduced all the time. So having a certain limitation on that would be helpful. Hence my my recommendation to change the language to of the proposed amendment prior to voting on that amendment. But that's open for discussion.
Okay, and Marilia.
Thank you so very much,
David.
So that's my sorry, I have a... Yes, my audio was open. I'm sorry about that. Just a point about this proposal. I think that I prefer the first one that was proposed initially by Marika, because I do feel that there are new genuine issues that we may come across that were not foreseen in a public comment period that could be raised. So I think that kind of narrowing down to issues already raised may prevent us from amending the charter with issues that we came to our knowledge that they are important. And I do feel that there is one issue that has been raised already very concretely, concretely and clearly. And if we can start with this issue already resolved, I think that we start in a better position. So if there were no concrete issues, I would completely agree that we just add the amendment proposed in the beginning and we leave to that. But we do have a concrete issue that is part of the process. So if we could resolve and address and that now, I think that it would be the best way to go. Thanks.
Okay. So my understanding of where we are. James, I'll go to James.
Marika's had her hand up for a long time too.
Has she? Oh, she's not showing up.
Scroll up.
Oh, yes, she has too. Absolutely. I think perhaps we'll go to Marika for clarification.
Yes, David. Thank you very much. I'm actually looking for clarification just because I just want to confirm that what currently is there as item three, I understand that Susan has proposed that, and I think I've seen Carlos agree with that. So I think at this stage I can probably remove the bracket and it can be considered part of the current motion. And as I understand, we're now considering potential changes to that language. If I may make one comment in relation to Volker's suggestion, and it's also something I pointed out in the chat before, that actually as part of the PDP manual, a PDP working group is already required to go out to different SOACs as well as stakeholder groups and constituencies to ask for input on the issues that is asked to be addressed. I think this, what the current language is doing is basically, reaffirming that, but also allowing the working group to specifically call out that, any input that the different parties may have on the charter is welcomed at that stage too. That's not something that is excluded, so I'm not really sure whether Volker's language is necessary, because I think it's up to the different groups to submit whatever they want. It's really up to the working group then to review that and determine, does the feedback provided, does that require any changes to the charter, or does the charter provide enough flexibility as is to address those issues? And there, I think an important element of the work of the working group will also be the work plan. So again, I think, once the working group has received all the feedback and has developed a work plan, it's another point where the council can check and say, well, have all issues been considered and addressed? Are they dealing with all the specific items that have been raised? Because I think at least from a staff perspective, we're of the view that the charter as is provides a lot of flexibility. Yes, not everything may be spelled out, but as said, all the underlying documents and information that is expected to be the foundational documents of this policy development process make clear reference to, you know, what is expected and what topics are expected to be considered. But again, I think, you know, the way it's currently being proposed, of course, doesn't prevent the charter coming back to the council to ask for specific language that may need to be added if they believe that the charter as written is constraining them in their work.
Thank you, Marika. Yes, and it's my understanding that there's language. The language proposed by Volker, it seems like many people find it acceptable, but it seems like, as you said, it may not be necessary. Is anyone strongly pushing for that language? Does anyone feel that the proposed language is overly broad and that we need to try to limit it? James.
Hi, David. James speaking. And I guess if I understand your question correctly, then I do believe that the proposed language, when it says any item, is is inviting the opportunity to introduce items that were unlike the concerns that were raised by Amr and unlike the concerns raised by registrars and other groups might be moving the goalposts. And I know that Susan and others who have been working on this since the days of the EWG probably do not want to circle back and reopen some of those discussions. I think that it could be something that we see later as something that was an impediment to moving this forward, as opposed to just kind of keeping the issues open indefinitely. So my thought would be to, and I believe this is where Volker was going originally, was to note that on any items that were previously expressed, either as part of the board GNSO consultation or as part of the public comments from any SO or any SG or C that needs to be addressed by the PDP working group, and that if we kind of throw open the doors to where we would effectively be creating a new public comment period, and I think that's what I would like to try to avoid.
Thank you, James. That's helpful, though. I understood Marika's comments to say that we can't really limit what feedback we get from SOs and ACs anyway. We can only encourage or discourage them. We can't actually limit it.
That's fair. Let's encourage them to reference comments that were previously made. Thank you.
Okay. Does anyone else want speak towards limiting the language? Or against, for that matter? If we have no one speaking for or against it, then we have to ask, do the mover and seconder consider a friendly amendment? Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. I'm just trying to get clarity on what the specific proposed language is. I know that Amr has put something in the chat. I think Volker put something beforehand. So if someone can just specifically read out what is being proposed, that may also help Susan and Carlos then consider whether they're supporting that change or not. So I don't know if Amr's in a position just to read out the sentence as he thinks it should read, and I'll try to keep up in typing it up.
Hi, this is Amr. Should I go ahead right now?
Yes.
Okay. Let's see. It says the working group, when convened, this is Resolve Clause 3. The working group, when convened, is instructed to reach out to all stakeholder groups / constituencies for additional feedback on any items that it believes should be considered that may not have been specifically called out in the charter. Maybe we could add here, as well as any input already provided by the stakeholder group / constituency in the public comment period for the preliminary issues report. Would that work?
James or anyone else, is that version of the language acceptable?
David, this is Amar again. I'm rereading the sentence. So the instruction in the resolve clause is about the working group reaching out to stakeholder groups and constituencies. So instead of adding as well as any input already provided by stakeholder groups / constituencies during the public comment period, maybe we can say that the working group is also asked to consider any inputs already provided, as opposed to just to make sure that this is not referencing an instruction to reach out to stakeholder groups and constituencies that have already provided input on issues. So I guess it would be a combination of reaching out to the stakeholder groups and constituencies as well as already considering input that has already been provided. Thanks.
Okay. Could you compare that to the language Volker has provided in the chat? That a significant deviation?
This is Amar. Yeah, I'm reading that right now. Okay, I'm just reading what Volker just put in the chat, and my issue with this is that the resolve clause here would then not instruct the working group to consider what was provided, but to reach out to the stakeholder groups and constituencies for additional feedback on items that have already been provided. So what I'm looking for here is not that the working group reach out to the community on input that has already been provided, but to go ahead and consider this input without reaching out to them. If folks would like the working group to also reach out to stakeholder groups and constituencies for additional feedback that hasn't already been provided, I'm fine with that as well. And this is something that normally does take place early on in any PDP. But I think it should be clear that input that has already been provided needs to be considered without reaching out to the community. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Well, it seems as if Volker's withdrawn his amendment. So we have one set of language on the table. Now, the question here is, we have this one set of language. The question now is this amendment acceptable to the mover and seconder of the motion? Yep, so it's acceptable. As that's acceptable to the mover and the seconder, that is automatically accepted. We don't need to vote on that amendment. We then move on to, now my understanding is the amendment that AMA proposed is still on the table, which is the amendment that we specifically include languages about a rights impact assessment. And the question is, I guess, Amar, do you still want to consider that amendment at this point?
I'm sorry, David. I'm a bit confused on what I'm being asked to consider right now. Could you elaborate?
Thanks. Okay. We have a language proposed that adds the resolved clause, but you at the on the chat list proposed a motion. My understanding is you proposed on the council list, you proposed an amendment that would specifically add language in calling for a rights impact assessment. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is what I asked for. But looking at resolve clause 3 right now on the screen, I think that's fine. We don't need to explicitly point to a rights impact assessment as long as it is clear that any input provided by stakeholder groups and constituencies will be considered by the PDP working group.
Yes.
And
so effectively,
and the rights impact. Yeah, so that would effectively include the rights impact assessment.
But yes, so you would be
in the,
so you would effectively be withdrawing your even though you may think that this motion covers the same it covers the same ground. It's still, it's different language, so that's still, that you'd have to, you're going to withdraw that motion, I take it.
As you believe. Withdraw the.
Amendment.
I would
because you believe that this other amendment has already satisfied that. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah, thanks.
Yep. I have a comment from Marilia. So, Marilia, could you? Oh, no.
Yes, thank you very much, David. I just would like to say that I did support the amendment that was made by Amr, so I would like to keep his amendment and present that as my own.
Okay, which is the language about the specific language calling for a rights impact assessment.
Exactly.
Okay. I guess Stephanie already has a hand up, so I'll ask her. But then we also need to consider from Susan and Carlos, will you accept that amendment, or do we need to put that to a, can discuss that and put it to a vote? Stephanie.
Thank you, Stephanie Perrin. For the record, I'd just like to second Marilia's motion to take over Amr's amendment. I think it's important, and while I accept that it's something is included there, when we get down to the actual work in the PDP, I think that something this important should be more clear and therefore should be explicitly drawn out. Otherwise, I think we'll be have a hard time including it. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. James.
Thank you, and James speaking. And I guess I would ask Stephanie and Relia if there's any specific concerns that they have about the language that's currently written that it would exclude the inclusion or of consideration of a rights assessment impact in the work of the working group, because I don't see that it explicitly excludes that, and I would worry that if we explicitly include one particular concern, then the registrar, look, we have six, and I'm trying to avoid a situation where we would have to explicitly call out our concerns as well. So I'm hoping that by making leaving an open door to addressing those concerns without naming them by name, that we can move this forward without getting stuck on any one concern or list of concerns. And I would just ask, is there something about the way that Amendment Resolve 3 reads now that you would think that would prevent us from doing that? Thanks.
Thank you. Susan.
I will defer to Maria Yula if she would like to respond to James. And then I have a comment about and question about actually amending the charter at this point.
Yep, thank you. Marilia, if you could respond to James.
Thank you very much, David. Yes, I do agree with you, James. I think that the language as it stands, it does not prevent us to look at anything that was raised during the public comment period, including the point of the rights assessment. But I think that the way it is written, it does not say that we should include this assessment either. So I think that this is a weak solution if we consider that our operation procedures calls us to make this assessment, and that this PDP is divided in a way that the earlier we introduce assessments like this, the more we will be able to include these concerns into the process in a meaningful way. So I do think that if you have a point among your 6 points, the thing is that you did not mention them, but if you have points that would be supported by the procedures or by the documents that guide our work, you should raise them right now, just like we are doing, because we feel that this concern has been raised before and it is encompassed in the documents that guide our work here. So that's why we're making this point. So I do feel that we should include this in a more clear way. I do agree with the language that was proposed by Amr, and although I see the progress with the language that has been proposed and that we see now included, I do not think that it completely solved the problem that we are raising here. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Susan, do you wish to speak now, or should I go to Stephanie?
Just a quick point. I'm concerned that we are really working on amendments to the charter at this point. It seems the feedback that we're getting, it may be lengthy and detailed, and in my understanding, may not be appropriate for the motion. So I'm wondering if staff can let us know what it would take to allow council to amend the charter right now.
Okay. Marika, you have your hand up. Would you like to respond to that right now?
Yeah, this is Marika. Basically, changing the charter means we need to get the charter up with the modified language. And I think, as James already pointed out as well, that obviously may as well trigger others to put in their specific issues. So I noticed that we're already an hour and a half into the call and we're just on item four. So I'm not sure how feasible that is at this stage. But I'll leave it on to the council to decide how to move forward on this.
Thank you. I'm assuming, yes, it was Stephanie. Please, we are a long way into the call, so please everyone be quick, and I'll probably end the queue there. We may have to decide on whether we're moving to a vote. Stephanie.
Thank you. Marilia has already Stephanie Perrin, for the record. Marilia has already said many of the things I wanted to say, probably better. I do think that the issue of individual stakeholder, individual registrant rights, in my appreciation, always comes last, and this is why we have a who is impasse. And in the light of many other PDPs that are also looking at the public interest and individual rights, we need to put it forward. I would draw to everyone's attention that in the debate over human rights that took place in the accountability framework, there was a flat-out statement that privacy could not be accepted as a specific human right pulled forward in the language. Now, if there's one right that is the ICANN, it's privacy rights. So I think that I cannot overemphasize the need to pull this out. I understand that the registries and registrars have issues that they care about, and they're important issues. If so, put them on the table. But I would suggest that over the 14 years of fighting over who is, the thing that usually solves it is individual end user or registrant rights. Thank you.
Amma?
Thanks, David. This is Amr. I just want to reconfirm my perspective on this. I'm hearing some noise. I think Resolve Clause 3, as it is on the screen in front of me right now, does the trick, as far as I'm personally concerned. I appreciate the challenges in trying to amend the charter at this point and understand that this may be difficult and it would leave us with nothing really to vote on in the motion. The way I see it, the only difference between adding this language in Resolve Clause 3 as opposed to adding it in the charter is that the Resolve Clause here does not specify what stage in the PDP this input provided, including what the NCSG and the registrars have submitted, will be considered. But I guess this is something the working group can take up. And my hope is that we could follow the same pattern as the risk assessments, and that would be what I would propose during the PDP working group. But from my personal perspective, and of course my fellow counselors from the NCSG are free to disagree with me, but from my personal perspective, I think Resolve Clause 3, the way it is now, is fine, and I think it would do the trick nicely. Thank you.
Okay. And that leaves, I think, Tony is the last speaker. Tony Harris, please.
Yes, Tony Harris, hello. I just wanted to say that I'm comfortable with the new wording in item 3.
I think it covers anybody's concerns about not being about this issue which is being raised. It won't be left out, and I suggest we move on and vote. Thank you.
Right. Well. My understanding is that Marilia and Stephanie still want to move an amendment that would be a change in the charter. Is that correct? Okay, so I take it that that's an amendment. I'll first ask, so Carlos has already said that it's not acceptable. That means, and could I ask Susan if you feel that language is acceptable? That's a good question, Susan. Is it feasible to amend the charter at this point? I'm not sure it is practical. Well, my understanding is that Stephanie and Marilia still wish to move a motion that would. I don't know that we even have direct language for this, that we would amend the charter, effectively amending, adding, affecting, including something under the phase one deliberation on page 69, saying something to the effect of a rights impact analysis be added. Yeah, and Carlos has definitely rejected that amending the charter at this point. If we're assuming that the council has the power to amend the charter with this motion, but the movers consider it unacceptable, we would then have to move to a vote on the amendment. Does that sound correct to everybody?
So I am totally confused at this point. So the reference language that Marika just posted in the chat is proposed as a change to the charter, not the motion, not the resolve clause?
Yes.
Okay, so if that's true, no, I can't agree to that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I figured. So could we? Stephanie and Marilia have reiterated that they want to move that amendment. So I think we're going to have to vote on that amendment.
Sounds good to me.
So I'm now going to call for a vote on that amendment.
David, this is Amar. Can I get a quick comment in before we go to a vote?
Yes, absolutely. One quick vote comment.
Thank you. The language that Marika put there is the language from the email that I sent about an hour before this call started, and I usually give folks a really hard time about suggesting amendments to motions that late prior to a council call, so I apologize about that. I think during this discussion, a few things have been made clear to me, and I'd like to just say them out loud now and ask if folks disagree with me. From a procedural perspective, I don't see any way of actually amending the charter at this point because we need to vote on a charter in the motion, and we don't have one to vote on if we decide that we need to amend it. So the only way we could actually do that is if the motion is withdrawn by Susan. That's my personal take on the procedural aspect of this. And I don't imagine that Susan wishes to withdraw the motion. From a practical perspective, the way I see it is that Resolve Clause 3 will keep what the NCSG wants in scope to be in scope of the PDP working group. It gives clear instructions to the PDP working group to consider the comments provided. I understand that there are some issues with this, especially there's no clarity on what phase of the PDP working group where this should be discussed, but this could be taken up by the working group members. So I just wanted to clarify where I stand on this and in my understanding of what it would take to amend the charter as opposed to amending the motion, yes. Especially in that regards. If I am mistaken, I would appreciate if someone did correct me. Thank you.
I would appreciate a clarification from staff as to whether we actually can amend the charter with a motion at this point. Marika.
This is Marika. I think procedurally there's nothing preventing you, but as I've noted before, this is very much on the fly, and I think registrars have also expressed that they had ideally wished to see changes, but they've decided that another route would be more appropriate, so that may be also something to factor in as part of that consideration.
Yep. Well, if it's if it's procedurally possible and Marilia and Stephanie wish the motion to go forward, we have to move to a vote, I think. So I would like to vote the council to vote on that amendment.
Hi there. This is Paul McGrady. I just lost connectivity, and I apologize for being so new at this GNSO council thing. It's hard for me to know what we've been called to vote on, and I'm trying to piece it out of the chat. Is there an authoritative chat where it's at, or could it be moved into the main document? How can we get some clarity on?
I'd like to apologize to all new councillors. This is unusually complicated mess, and I'd like to say to everybody that this is a good example of why moving motions and amendments at the last minute and constructing language on the fly is something to be avoided, because it takes up a lot of time. And we have accepted the charter amendment as friendly, but so the language in front of you with the change to the resolve clause is correct, but Stephanie and Marilia still wish us to move a revised language that includes, it's now at the bottom of the notes on the screen, a revised language that will include a bullet under the Phase 1 deliberations on Phase 69, rights impact analysis, have registrant rights to be affected, be analysed and considered. So this is a motion that in the amended motion would essentially revise the charter slightly. So I'd like to move to a vote on that. I think this is one we can probably do by... we'll do a roll call vote. So Glenn, can you do a roll call vote on that amendment to the charter, the vote for an amendment to the charter?
Thank you, David.
I'm sorry again. I apologize, but what happens if this amendment is voted down? Do we then consider the motion as previously presented, or does that
kill
the motion?
If this is voted down, we then consider the motion as previously amended. Yes, we consider the motion as previously amended with the clause 3 of the resolve clause, because that amendment was agreed on and accepted by the movers.
Okay, thank you.
Shall I go ahead, David?
Yes, thank you, Glenn.
Thank you. Rubens Koo.
No.
Marilia Mathieu?
Yes.
Valerie Tan? Valerie? Valerie, can you hear me? I'll go pass over. Keith Drazek?
No.
Volker Grimann?
No.
Jennifer Standiford?
No.
Susan Kawaguchi?
No.
Valerie Tan, can you hear me? Valerie, are you online? I'll come back to you. Amar El-Fadal?
Yes.
Stefania Milne? And would Stephanie, please, Stephanie Perrin, please vote for Stefania?
Yes.
Thank you. Stephanie Perrin for yourself?
Yes.
Jules Helsingers?
Abstain.
Thank you. Vote for Rick Knoben?
No.
Paul McGrady?
No.
Heather Forrest?
No.
Is Valerie Tan back on the line? Ed Morris is absent. Marilia, would you please vote for Ed?
Yes.
Philip Corwin?
No.
Donna Austin?
No.
David Cake?
I'm going to abstain.
James Bladel?
No.
Tony Harris?
No.
Valerie, are you on the line? Has Valerie dropped? I see her in the Adobe Connect room. But we are missing her vote. Can we for the moment mark that as absent? I'll mark Valerie's vote as absent because we cannot get her on the line to vote. So the results are: in the contracted party house, 6 votes against, and in the non-contracted party house, 5 votes in favor, and 6 votes against, and 2 abstentions. In the contracted party house, there's 6 votes against, 1 person is absent. In the non-contracted party house, there are 5 votes in favor, 6 votes against, and 2 abstentions. So the motion, the amendment does not pass.
Yes, the amendment does not pass. Now, my suggestion is that we, having defeated that amendment, we move immediately to the voting on the amended motion. Does anyone up? Tony, is that an old hand? I see 2 hands in the chat. Tony, is that an old hand? And no, Paul has put his hand down. Okay, so I think we will move directly to the vote on this one. I don't know if we need a roll call vote on this one, or do we? Does anyone think we need a full roll call vote? Okay, in that case, I'm going to say, do we have anyone voting against the amended motion? Do we have anyone abstaining from the amended motion? I would like to, everyone is in favour of the amended motion?
Aye.
Aye from me.
Aye.
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 Sorry, David, this is Amar again. I'm a bit confused. Right now we're voting on the motion we see in front of us on the screen.
Yep, on the amended motion.
Right?
The full amended motion.
Okay. All right, then aye from me as well.
Yes. I think we have no abstentions and no votes against, so I think that one is clearly passed.
David, can I just check if Valerie Tan has been in the vote or if she is still offline? Not hearing anything, we will note that she was absent for the vote. Thank you very much.
Right. Thank you, everyone, for their patience on that. Was quite a complicated motion that's taken a substantive amount of the time, substantively longer than we intended for it. We may need to move some items from the agenda later. So next item is vote on the new referral request to the Standing Committee for GNSO Improvements Implementation. And to present that motion, I would like to call on Wolf Ulrich Noben.
Yes, yeah. Thanks, David. It's Wolf Ulrich speaking. I do hope so. We don't need that much time for that motion. It goes back to the discussion we had at the development session of the Council in Dublin after the first one of chair election. And there came up some points which were obvious, said that there's something, let me say, confusing or not very clear or missing in the rules of operations, and that should be investigated and should be discussed, and that should be brought up and then brought back to the council with some recommendations with regards to amendments of the existing rules of operations. So that's what it is about this motion. And I'm glad, in addition, Mary was preparing a review request for the SCI because that motion is planned to put a mandate on the SCI to deal with that matter. And as is the rules, I learned about that, there is to be a formal request for review for the SCI to be done. And also in this document, which was circulated by Mary, it is described in detail about the issues. More or less, let me just summarize the content of the motion is the issues is about the council terms, term of the member of council members in relation to the to those members who are available, who should be available during the election. And that was some open issue. There is something with regards to the vice chair terms. In a specific case, when it ends with that meeting where the election is going to be taken, and there's a question with regards to the general timeline from the nomination of council chair candidates up to the election, which normally the council is going to discuss before that election. And so that is your request with regards to that motion to go into details and to give a mandate to the SCI to discuss that matter. All the details are coming from the rules of operations, which may be new, for example, for the newcomers, especially, and I would like also to ask those who are not very familiar about to review these sections if you are interested in. If you don't mind, David, I would like just to read the resolved, and then we can open that for discussion.
Please.
So the resolved is that the GENSO Council requests the Standing Committee on Improvements Implementation, so-called SCI, to review sections 2.2b, 2.2f, and 2.2g of the GNSO operating procedures with respect to clarifying, first, the eligibility of incoming council members to run for the position of GNSO chair, second, the start and end dates and the duration of the chair and vice chair terms in accordance with the ICANN bylaws, and third, the timing of publication of the election results, and to recommend a general timetable for election of the GNSO Council Chair to be approved by the GNSO Council and added to the GNSO operating procedures. Just coming back to one point, it's not about the rules and the, for example, the details of the rules itself with regards to the election, for example, the thresholds and the voting scheme which is used during the election. It's rather and more important with regards to the process which is used coming in the timeline which is used for the election. So that's it from my point of view, and I'm hand it over to back to you, David. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe I've got Volker would like to speak to this item. Volker.
Thank you. I think we have a very straightforward motion in front of us, and I hope that everybody can vote in favor for this. As we've seen from the last council chair election, there are some problems with the current way that our bylaws are structured that Wolf Ulrich has already shined some light on, the first of which being the eligibility for newcomers. As it's written right now, if the council wants to make a newcomer their chair, which is, of course, their right, then we would have a situation where they would be encouraged not to vote for a chair under the current rules because he wouldn't be eligible under the first round, but then under the second round, voting election time, then he would be eligible. For example, if James were a newcomer, he wouldn't have been eligible the last time. Then everybody could have voted for none of the above, postponed the election to the next election time, and then voted for James that time. That is a circumvention that is probably not necessary. I think the rules should be looked at for that, and a solution should be found that makes sense and would not necessitate such a circumvention. The second part being that the current way that our processes are structured is that the bylaws, that the co-chairs leave their office at the same time as the chair. Therefore, if no chair is elected and the various groups, houses could not decide on a co-chair, then we would indeed be leaderless. Therefore, having a good look at when the co-chairs leave office, when the chair leaves office, and make sure that these are not the same time or that a better solution is found is very worthwhile for our time, because while it worked very well this time and we had the ability to continue on as co-chairs with David and me, myself, we could have faced a situation where both him and me were termed out, would leave the council at the last meeting, and then we would indeed be without leadership unless somebody else has been replaced at this, on a very short notice. And if there's some deadlock within one or the house or the other, then that would be very negative for the council and for the perception of the council and to the outside world. Therefore, having a good look at this, at their current processes or bylaws there, is very worthwhile, and I recommend that we move to have this included in the SCI's work.
Yes, and I'd just like to say, yes, I agree with Volker's concerns that we end up in a situation where the council has no leadership whatsoever and is thus unable to even sort of run a meeting. Okay, does anyone else wish to speak to this, or shall we move directly to a vote? I'm taking that means no one else wishes to speak to this motion. And again, I think we don't need to go to a full recorded vote, if that's okay with staff. So we'll move to a quick vote.
So glad. Can you hear me?
Yes, I could hear somebody.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Hello?
We can hear you, Val.
I'm getting a couple of iterations of the call, so I'm not sure where I am. Hello?
We can hear you.
No. Yeah, I think Glenn called my name a few times, but I don't think I was being heard, so I'm not sure how, you know, I should be getting into the process. Yes, hi, Glenn.
Yes, hello, Valerie. This is Glenn. I did call your name a few times. It was to vote.
Yes.
And
so voting on the
online.
Yes, sorry. I apologize. It's to vote on item 4, isn't it?
Yes, but I think we must ask the council what to do now that you're back.
For me, it's no.
Well, we have moved on to motion 4. Your vote was recorded as absent, but I don't believe your vote would have made a difference to the outcome.
Sorry about that, Glenn.
Thank you, Valerie.
I would suggest we move on to... So that means so a vote on item 5. Who wishes to vote? Does anyone wish to vote against this motion? Does anyone wish to abstain from this motion? All those in favour of the motion, please say aye or type yes in the chat.
Aye.
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 Aye. Yeah. Aye. There being no votes against and no abstentions, I'll declare that motion carried. Right, now item 6. This is a vote on the adoption of the GNSO review of the GAC Dublin communique. This motion was the final. Final language for this was only sent through to the council list just during the call, I think. So we could choose to vote on this or defer. Stephanie has sent this language through. I believe the current... Stephanie says that she believes that we should probably discuss the motion before we vote on it. I'd like a basically feeling from the council as to whether we would like to vote on this on the GAC communique, discuss and vote on the GAC communique, response to the GAC communique now, or would we like to defer it to the next meeting? Any councillor that has a yep, Donna would like to defer, and so would Heather, and so would Rubens and Fama. Okay, I think that's enough people have asked to defer that we will defer. We don't need to vote on that. If any one councillor wishes to defer, we consider it. Does anyone definitely want it to be considered at this meeting? Okay, I think we're going to say we defer item 6 to the next meeting. Okay, so if we defer item 6, that's all the items for voting on. Having got through those bits of the agenda, Volker, would you like me to pass the chair back to you or carry on?
Thank you, David. I think I'll take over from here, just because I've been notified that we have a bit of a timing issue, because our currently scheduled item 10, our speaker Nick Tommaso, has a little bit of a timing that stopped coming up very soon, so I would like to move that topic up right now. This, of course, being the attendee security request that has been made as to a briefing for the GSO Council with regard to the security situation on the ground on our previous meeting places. This is not to say that this is specifically scheduled for specifically an item for Marrakesh, although that has been voiced by certain councillors as a main concern, but we've heard of robberies right outside the venue at other venues as well. So I think it's a more of a general concern that we as a council should hear about from ICANN staff as to what the considerations are, what the considerations that are that ICANN has made to protect the councillors, or what the considerations are on the ground that should be taken into account when attending a meeting at any given value. So with that, I would like to hand over to Nick Tommaso from ICANN staff to just give us this update.
Thank you very much. Good day, everyone. And this is Nick Tommaso. I head up meetings for ICANN. Thanks for altering your schedule for us today. And thanks for giving us the opportunity to brief you on security arrangements for the ICANN meeting in Marrakesh in March. I understand this will be a standing briefing for every ICANN meeting moving forward, but this is a good start. On the call today with me are Aziz Halali, our host for the meeting in Morocco, Jeff Bickers of ICANN Security, and our security consultant, Chris Clark. Chris is with Control Risks, a global risk and strategic consulting firm. They specialize in security and political risk. We've been coordinating security arrangements with the Moroccan government and the conference facility for quite some time. Aziz, I hope you are on the call. Aziz will start with an overview of our activities, and then we'll turn the discussion over to Chris Clark for a deeper dive. Aziz, are you there?
Yes, I just arrived. Thank you. Hello? Are you hearing me?
Yes. Yes, Aziz. Please start with your briefing.
Okay, thank you. I want just the link of Adobe Connect, if Natalie can send it to me, please, because we will have a presentation.
Aziz, this is Marika. The slides are up, so I can move them for you if you like.
Thank you. Can I have the link of Adab Connect, please? Okay, I start. Good day for everyone. I am Aziz Hilali. I'm from Morocco, and I am also the chair of African at Large. Let me first say that the city of Marrakech is a city in which are organized a large number of international events all year round. And for example, I hope you have the slides because I am not on Adobe Connect. This slide was sent to me from the head of Palmeri Golf Palace Security. And if you have in front of you the first one, we organized, for example, in Marrakech last November 2014, there was the fifth Global Entrepreneurship Summit. And this event brought together over 3,000 entrepreneurs with high-level government officials, global entrepreneurs, corporate leaders, and young entrepreneurs. We have also, in 2014, the World Forum on Human Rights in Marrakech in the same month. And they bring also 500 people, and you can I can send you the link if you want. Another great event which took place in 2015 in May, in the same place site where will there be our ICANN meeting is Clinton Global Initiative Middle East and Africa meeting. Between 5 and 7 May in Marrakech, in the same place. In addition to those I have just mentioned, you have here other events. Nick, do you have the presentation or no?
Yes, I have it. It's up in the Adobe Connect room, Aziz, so everyone can see what you're referring to.
Good.
Tell me when you want the slide advanced, or tell Marika when you want the slide advanced.
Okay. And in addition to those I have just mentioned, you have here other event which was hosted by the Palmeri Golf Palace site where our meeting will take place. In slide two, regarding the site where our meeting will take place is the PGP's Palmeri Golf Palace. This site, excuse me, this PGP is a zone of 200 hectares with a golf course of 24/7 hole. There are two hotels. There are terraced to the convention center where our meeting take place. These two hotels, which the name is Golf Hotel du Golf and Palmeri Hotel, these two hotels, as well as villas and apartments, have all been requisitioned for ICANN meeting. These two hotels will be staying, have a capacity of 750 rooms. And slide three, please. Next one, please. You have the site is completely secure with camera everywhere, and you have some safety measure here. It was sent from the hotel for me for this meeting. We have anti-intrusion equipment. We have anti-video surveillance 24/24 and 7 by week. And we have also, I think Chris will speak about our meeting during 3 days here when he I received him here in Morocco. We had a meeting with the at the national and the regional level with the official of security at the level of national and the regional. And in the slide, the next slide, we see you will see it is a closed and monitored zone. The head of security at the hotel gave me this confidential document that show the schematic of the security Palmeri Golf Palace zone. In addition, there is a vehicle security national carry out constantly around 7, 7, 25 hours, and we will have reinforcement when we have event in the site. We have a reinforcement of the security by national security. And when we had our meeting with the regional security, they told us, Chris and me, there is the possibility of escorting group, for example, for a dinner in the evening in the city center, if it is if this is possible on request. The other hotel which chose Nick and I to house the other participants are in the city center are on the same avenue that leads to the site of the meeting, and this avenue will be totally secure during the week, and transport of participants will be provided by ICANN. And finally, in the next slide, I think I will give the floor to Chris because he is a more specialist or expert than me on the security. I just to tell you, we had a meeting with a very, very high level security at the national and regional level. The governor of Marrakesh, we received and confirmed us that the Marrakesh security services are running smoothly and they are used to ensure the security of events and participants since Marrakesh hosts this event all through the year. I will stop there because I think Chris can explain more than me about the security, and thank you for listening to me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Aziz. Chris, it's please start with your presentation. Thank you.
Yes, for sure. And a quick check. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. Good day to everybody. I recognize we are a bit over, as was mentioned, so I will be very brief. Aziz touched on some really key points there. We had not only did we have these meetings at all levels of in Morocco, they were very open, and so we're establishing information sharing with the Moroccan government, and also with private sector security analysis that are giving us really detailed level information on the threats in the region, and we'll be using those for as we develop our security plan. And with those meetings, we will continue with the Moroccan authorities to coordinate and collaborate to address any potential threats, to that. Right now, we do categorize the risk as low in accordance with our analysts. We also have these relationships with OSAC, the Overseas Security Advisory Council. And taking in accordance with all that information, we are applying our security plan, and not only in a preventative aspect, but also in the case of any incident, we're prepared to respond with an incident management plan. We'll have an operations center that will be distributing an assistance line to all attendees so they can call in if there are any issues. We will have security risk consultants on hand that will help to not only provide surveillance, but also to be prepared to provide response should any incidents arrive. But with this, you know, outstanding relationship with the Moroccan authorities, we feel like the preparations that we're making are going to be able to adequately deal with anything should it arise. At that point, I think we can go ahead, and since we're a bit tight on time, with any questions that anyone on the call may have.
Chris, it's Nick. Let me make one more comment before we turn over to Q&A, and that is that we will keep a watchful eye on security around the world and liaise with our government colleagues in Morocco in the run-up to the Marrakesh meeting. Aziz has already arranged a meeting for us with the Moroccan authorities again in February to work with their planning team, and they do have a planning team that they've assigned to this meeting, to ensure that we stay abreast of any developing incidents or issues and that we react accordingly. Now, any questions, please?
Thank you for the presentation. I think you've addressed a lot of concerns that have been raised before. I see that the security topic is front and center for the planning of this meeting, and I hope this is also a concern for future meetings in other regions that may carry their individual risks. I would like to open the floor for questions. Any questions that anybody would like to raise right now, please raise your hand. Otherwise, I would propose that we send you a brief letter or a questionnaire with comments from counselors that have any issues or any concerns, and ask you to respond to us prior to the meeting so we can take these into consideration. I see a hand from James. James, go ahead.
Hi, thanks, Volker, and thanks for the update. I think there are a number of questions in the chat specific to the security issues, not only at the venue, but also I think at other areas, including the airport. My question is that, you know, since we are over time, if we could possibly just defer this to a list of a letter, some communication from the council that we can gather more concerns from our groups and then submit them and then sometime in advance of the meeting get a response. But, peripheral to this, there's another issue with the venue, and I think this question is more correctly directed to Nick, is that we're hearing a number of issues relative to folks trying to actually secure rooms at these hotels, that they're being told that they must pay in advance, that it's non-refundable, that they must, you know, submit all kinds of documentation, and that, that even that rooms are not available midweek for one or two days of their block of stay for the duration of the ICANN meeting. So I don't know if this is something you can maybe address off list, because we're behind time. But what can we do here to get through these travel problems? Because I don't think anyone, that isn't somehow funded by ICANN or managed by ICANN constituency travel has had much luck getting a hotel room at this point.
This is Nick. I was made aware by David Olive of the problem you're experiencing this morning. I've already engaged my meeting planning team to resolve it, and I'll report back to you with the solution shortly.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you, Nick. Thank you, James, for your question. There was also a concern raised on the chat that the rooms in the Hotel Marrakesh would not be available on Thursday night, i.e. the night after the last hour of the meeting, which most people usually take to travel the next day. And that, of course, also is a concern to a lot of attendees that they would have to either leave early and miss the board meeting, the public forum, or find some other form of accommodation. So that will also be something that we would like to address in writing or by letter later on. One final point that I would like to raise with you, Nick, while I have you here before I close this topic, is that we're still working on the meeting strategy plan, and I would propose that we organize a call between now and end of January to get all the parties on the table and finalize at least the strategy for the Marrakesh meeting and ensure that everyone's on the same page and that we get a schedule that works for everyone.
I will make sure that that happens. Yes, we are working very closely with ICANN staff as well as the board to get the board schedule as well as the high interest topics booked so that the SOAC SGCs can work around that to schedule their meetings. But I will certainly have a SOAC call in the near future to cover these issues with you.
Thank you very much. I think that was a good update. Further questions, we will get to you as soon as possible. And I think that we can look forward to an interesting meeting.
We can. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. The next topic is the discussion of the council action required with regards to the cross-community work group on enhancing ICANN accountability. As you know, this has been an important piece of work that has been going on for a while, and we have received a request that we consider the proposed recommendations, even though they're not final yet, and there have been some concerns raised with regard to that, especially with regards to the council and the stakeholder groups, constituencies being asked to provide comments or sign off on something or preliminary sign off on something before having read the public comments, which might influence on how we feel about this. So I would like to ask Thomas Rickert, who has joined us, to briefly, very briefly, please elaborate on this topic and tell us how we can help and what we can expect and what the timelines are supposed to be. The timelines have been posted to the list, but it may be helpful to just summarize them here as well.
Thanks very much, Volker, and welcome back, everyone. I try to be as brief as you've been on agenda item number 4. But joking aside, I guess I can really try to make some time here. What you see in the Adobe room now is the covering sheet of a summary document that we've published a few days back. And just to put this into context, you will remember that when we were in Dublin, we've been asked to be more transparent about the recommendations that we're working on. People have complained that what we're doing is very hard to understand unless you follow the process quite closely, which we can't expect a lot of people to do. And we've taken this these concerns to heart, and we've been working on what we now call the update document to ensure that we have a concise document that explains in plain language with as little acronyms as possible what the CCWG's recommendations are, as well as how they would work in practice. What you will not find in this document is a rationale for why we picked the options in there over other options that we've discussed over the last months. Also, you will not find any legal niceties or legal memos. Those will be left to the final report that I'm going to speak to in a moment. But what's important to take away from this is that this document covers the recommendations that we have, and most of them are consensus-based inside the CCWG now. It also clearly marks those areas where we're still working on as not yet finalized. So you will instantly spot what areas are still unresolved, and there are only 4 areas to which this applies. And we will come up with an update with solutions on the remaining questions in the next couple of days. But this shouldn't keep you away from, you meaning councillors as well as their respective groups, from looking at this paper and analyzing it to determine whether or not you can support the recommendations. And support from the chartering organizations is key. The charter that, amongst others, the GNSO has adopted requires approval from the chartering organizations. And what we need is the approval from 5 out of 6 chartering organizations. And let's be very clear. This chartering organization support is decisive for us to be able to pass on our recommendations, our final report, to the board, and then for the board to pass it on to NTIA. While we are cognizant of the fact that wider community input is important, still, we, you know, with the time constraints given, we need to work a little bit in parallel on the different areas. So basically, you will now have the opportunity to look at the recommendations in their current status. We will then issue the final report. We will solicit feedback from the chartering organizations as we will from the general public. And hopefully the chartering organizations will swiftly be able to adopt the recommendations. And unless the community chimes in with severe concerns, there will be no adjustments required based on community feedback. So I would really recommend that you take a look at this draft. It's an easy-to-read document. It's very accessible. It has a 2-page executive summary at the beginning, and it has clear explanations on the community powers, on the revisions to the request for reconsideration, on the IRP, and the other areas in it, so that you can clearly understand how the community powers in this post-transition accountability system can be operationalized. Can we now look at the table with the next steps, please? So basically what we did is publish the update document, just to not confuse it with a summary of the final recommendations. As you remember, I just mentioned that a few questions still haven't been answered. Actually, we've narrowed it down pretty much to only the stress test 18 question. For the other open issues, we have solutions on their way. They just need to be finalized in terms of concrete language. So what we're planning to do is release to the CCWG the full proposal, including all the appendices spelling out rationales, legal memos, and other supporting documentation that those that want to dive into that can then read. We will then work to finalize the language, and the plan is, if you look a little bit further down in this this table, that we're going to publish the final report on the 30th. And that will be the beginning of the second phase of soliciting feedback. So we're now in the first phase where people can actually look at the update document, and we would really appreciate for the chartering organizations to then consider the final report. And as we phase this out in parallel with translations and professional proofreading and editing, we would appreciate for the chartering organizations to provide feedback by the 21st of December to let us know whether they have issues with the recommendations in our report. It's a total of 12 recommendations because our charter has a particularity in it saying that if a chartering organization cannot support one or more recommendations from the final report, they need to come back with to us with a rationale for their concerns, as well as with a suggestion for a recommendation that they could support. So this is an additional feedback loop that we needed to factor into the overall timeline. So receiving that feedback or an indication whether or not the GNSO in this case can support all the recommendations or whether it can't needs to be with us by the 21st of December. And we will then work on a summary of the public comment received. If need be, based on the outcome of the public comment, we will go back to the chartering organizations and advise them whether what they got as a final report needs additional tweaks. But let's just hope that there are no tweaks required because the community will support the changes between the second and the third report. Can we move to the overall timeline, please? So this, what we just saw in the AC is a detailed planning for the next couple of days. What you're now going to see is the overall timeline, and we're I've showed you through the process until the 21st of December. We're then going to work on the analysis of the comments received, and we're also going to work on a supplemental, a final report based on the feedback from the chartering organizations, whether they can or cannot support all the recommendations, and that would allow for the chartering organizations to receive the amended report by the 7th of January. The chartering organizations would then, according to their own processes, make a determination on the support or lack of support of the overall final package, so that we are aiming to pass it on to the ICANN board on the 22nd of January. I should note that there is the possibility for chartering organizations to get administrative support from ICANN to hold face-to-face meetings should they need one for this purpose. But since we changed the GNSO's operating principles quite a while back to allow for remote decision-making intersessionally, the GNSO might not be in the need of that. So let me pause here and open it up for questions or comments.
Thank you, Thomas. I would like to ask everyone to who wants to ask questions to this point to raise their hands in the Adobe Connect right now. I will close the queue after I hand it over to Marie, after Marika finished speaking, because Marika just alerted me to some timing issues that we would also have to consider with regard to a response in our next council meeting. So after Marika is done, I will close the queue, so please bear that in mind. Marika, go ahead.
Yes, this is Marika. Just to remind people of the upcoming meetings and deadlines we have for that, that may factor into your consideration of you know, how the council can or should respond, and as well what, you know, assistance potentially may be needed from some of the appointed members to this group. So the next council meeting is scheduled for the 17th of December. The deadline for our motions and documents is the 7th of December. Additionally, and it's also an item that will come up under any other business if they have time, Glenn has circulated a proposed a schedule of meetings for 2016, and currently we have foreseen two meetings in January, one on the 14th and one on the 21st, to basically have you know, sufficient flexibility to be able to deal with the proposal when it comes in. As I see on the chart now, it's foreseen that it would come back in the final form on the 7th of January, which would be too late to meet the document deadline for the 14th of January meeting. But obviously that meeting could otherwise might be used as a briefing or discussion session, and then the 21st of January meeting as the meeting during which the final proposal can be considered. So I just wanted to point out some of those timing and deadline issues that you may want to consider as part of your discussion.
Thank you, Marika. I now have a queue of two. First is Phil Corbin, then Robin Gross. To each of those, of course, Thomas can respond. And if anything is urgent, please mention in the chat. And we also have the list to discuss further, of course. So please go ahead, Phil.
Yeah, thank you very much. I was on the CCWG call this morning, and I've distributed this timeline and requested feedback from BC members on whether they believe this is sufficient time. To the extent I've had very limited feedback from the BC prior to today, and to the extent there's been that feedback, there's been an indication of a desire for a comment period of at least 30 days. I am concerned, given that that this is very, very aggressive. It's 21 days for the general public. It's 9 days for those who do not read English or are waiting for translations, because the translations aren't scheduled to be issued until December 12th. And for the council to provide an initial indication of support or non-support or areas of concern by the 21st, Our next scheduled council meeting is for December 17th, so it really requires council members to consult with those they represent and really take a decision by December 17th on whether we're going to support this or ask for more time. So I'll stop there. I'm looking for more guidance from the BC before I weigh in more officially. But I'm a bit personally uncomfortable with the speed of this, given that this is not a refinement of the second proposal, but a significant deviation from the member model to the designator model, and questions about the procedures and the effectiveness of accountability through that model. And also, there are major unresolved issues as of today. We'll see how they're resolved by November 30th. But that's mission stress test 18 and some other things. But I'll stop there, and I'll look forward to comments from other council members. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. Thomas, do you want to comment on that, or should I go on?
I suggest that we wait for Robin and Paul also to chime in, and then I would comment.
Okay, go ahead, Robin.
Hi, this is Robin Gross. Can you hear me okay?
Perfectly fine.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, you're very loud and clear.
Okay, great. So I represent the non-commercial stakeholder group on the CCWG Accountability Working Group, and I really want to echo what Phil just said, some of the concerns about the aggressiveness of this timeline. I think it makes it unrealistic and exclusionary, and particularly to non-English speakers. Only having 9 days available for them to be able to read and digest a report that's going to be in the 100-page range, extremely technical, with significant changes from what we had from the last time, with the rationale only being provided for the first time. I think it's just we're asking for trouble by trying to do it this quickly, that we're going to make mistakes and we're not going to hear from all the stakeholders, particularly those outside the ICANN community, the non-English speakers. So I'm really concerned about the aggressiveness of the timeline and the impact that it's going to have on the quality of our work and the acceptability of our work with the broader Internet community. Thanks.
Thank you, Robin. Back to Thomas.
I'm sorry, Volker. I thought we wanted to hear Paul first.
Paul, Paul has raised his hand as well. I already closed the queue, but sure, why not?
All right. Thanks, Volker. Paul McGrady here. I just want to echo what Robin's saying and essentially what Phil said, which is this is a very compressed time frame. It's especially compressed given that it falls really in the middle of two major North American holidays. One, well, I shouldn't say that Christmas is North American, but it certainly is celebrated in North America. And in terms of how this will be perceived by people who are perhaps skeptical of the transition to begin with, is that it is a rush job pushed through under the haze that the holidays create in a lot of places, including North America. And I just don't think it serves anybody's interest to push this hard so for such an aggressive time frame on such an important issue. And lastly, just to channel my good friend Kathy Kleiman for a moment. The short time frames just really don't give us enough time to consider unintended consequences of what is essentially a new proposal. So I think I join my voice with others calling for us to find a way to build in some more time for good deliberation. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. What I seem to hearing is that there's a bit of reluctance to commit to this timeline at this stage. I think what we can commit to is that we will try our best to analyze the report and take this report to our constituencies and stakeholder groups as soon as possible and start the discussions, maybe also with the help of the CNSO appointed members to the CCWG who could report back to us and explain unclear parts. And we try to be able to provide some feedback, even if that feedback is not yet a sign-off on what is proposed, but something that would allow us to act very quickly once we have a consensus position in the interest of moving the timeline along, maybe not as aggressively as proposed here, but still in a speedy fashion. Thomas, any last words?
Thanks very much, Volker, and thanks to councillors for raising their voices and sharing concerns, which certainly as a leadership team, the CCWG takes very seriously. What I would like to say in response to the concerns, maybe to help understand why we're doing what we're doing a little bit better. We've done the math, counting backwards, with the project management for the overall implementation of what's required prior to transition, counting backwards from the September end of the first contract extension on the IANA functions contract. And the date, the delivery date that was specified to us was mid-January. So with our delivery to the ICANN board on the 22nd of January, we would slightly miss that target already. And we've done further backward counting based on the discussions in Dublin, and we've agreed on the planning that I just presented to you again in Dublin. We know it's a little bit of a stretch for everyone, but I would slightly dare to disagree with the notion that this is an entirely new proposal. A lot of what's in there has been presented to the community in two reports already. We've made changes, substantial changes, that is certainly true, but nonetheless, there is an awful lot in our final recommendations that is already known. And we've made it even easier for the community to understand by coming up with these plain language documents. The report will also be much easier to read than the previous report. We will further make it easier for commenters to chime in by making the public comment submission interactive as the GNSO did with GNSO review. So it's going to be a Q&A type approach that can but must not be used by commenters. But the format to solicit responses to specific questions on the changes between the second and the third report allows for us to focus the community's attention on the very changes while still allowing for free text, free form text submissions by those that want to take that route. Let me also say that there was the SOAC leadership call earlier today. And it is true that GNSO representatives have voiced concerns about the timeline, but we did not hear any concerns from other parts of the community during that call. I don't want to overstate this, and I certainly can't testify that there are no concerns from other parts of the community, but what I can say is that there seems to be an overwhelming willingness to try help make this work. We are under a lot of pressure. There's an expectation from the technical community, the numbering community, that we finally deliver, since they've been working hard to come up with their recommendations almost a year back. And they've spoiled their own holiday seasons in order to deliver months and months back. And there is a fear that if we stretch this out further, that we might miss the targeted transition overall time plan. And this is what we're trying to address here. I hope that I could shed some light on us not trying to be stubborn and dump top-down a certain timeline on the community, but we want to operationalize what we had in our charter and what you guys have tasked us to make possible. And there's so much energy that went into this. We really very, very close to being able to finalize this. We have reached consensus on almost every part of it, and there's a lot of documentation out there, even on the bits that you don't find in the update document that I outlined earlier. So we would really urge you to take this information, particularly the members, one of which I am. So I would volunteer to discuss with you all the questions you might have, explain what we're doing to hopefully expedite the analysis and the feedback. And, you know, I've done this earlier with the registries and the registrars, and I'm more than happy to speak to other parts of the community, the GNSO community, as well as other parts of the ICA community. I should stop here. Thanks for bearing with me, and I hope that we can make this work. But I will take your concerns back to the CCWG leadership, and we will further discuss this. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. Thank you for your time and for your presentation. I think we have our work cut out for you, for ourselves as well, and let's see how far we can get with this. Next on our agenda is the action item for the GNSO candidates for the ICA competition Consumer Trust and Consumer Choice Review Team. Here we have a topic that can be pushed a bit to the next meeting because, as I've learned, the timeline can be extended to December the 17th. We will need probably a formal request that we, as the council, say, send a letter noting that we need the time until the December the 17th to make a commitment on which candidates, if any, we want to endorse. And I would like to hear if anyone's opposed to pushing this to the next meeting and the list.
Volker, this is James.
James?
Thanks. Yes, I support moving this to the next meeting and taking some work to the list where, because I believe that, you know, formally requesting that is important, but we also need to get a clearer understanding as much as possible of what the prescribed composition of this group will be. I think that we've seen some notes about the general number of participants, but, you know, I think that, you know, it's important for us to understand exactly how many of those will be experts, how many of those will be coming from other SOs and ACs, and then what, you know, remains for the GNSO to, you know, and then how we want to balance all different segments of our community as well. So, I think we just need a little bit more time to do this. I think we need some more guidance, and I think we should take this up next meeting, but use the intervening time to do some prep work so that we can hit the ground running. Thanks.
Thank you, James. Any further comments? I have Susan and Margie in the queue. Susan, please go ahead.
Yes, I agree with James that we need to look at this further, and I also propose that we come up some sort of process for this. Not sure what that is yet, but I think we need that better understanding, and we also need more representation than for each of the constituencies and stakeholder groups than we've had in the past, in my opinion. So I would propose that I can start a thread the Monday after Thanksgiving on developing a process, and maybe we can handle most of this on the email thread and then discuss at the next meeting.
Thank you, Susan. And what you said just brought to mind something that I, an email that I read earlier, Wolf Uhrig suggested that we have a process in place that we use for a different proceeding, for a different selection process, which we might be able to adapt to that. So, Ulrich, if you could share that to the list and with Susan, so we can get that ball rolling as well, and maybe be able to rely on an existing process instead of having to develop the wheel anew, even if that process was designed for something else, that would be helpful. So basically, the proposal here stands at us developing or looking at a process that we can use, at the same time requesting an extension of the timeline until the next council meeting, and in the meantime having a look at the candidates and seeing if there's any endorsement. All that will be happening on the list. I'm looking forward to that discussion there. I see Margie and Stephanie. Do you have something that you would like to add? Thank you. Margie?
Yes, hi. It's Margie Milan with staff. Just to answer James' question about the composition, there is no formal numbers associated with this. All we have is what the affirmation of commitment says, which is essentially that there will be, you know, a review team, and the review team composition will be determined by the chair of the GAC and the ICANN CEO. As I think it was noted on your council list over the last week, that has tended to result in a review team of about 16 members, but that's certainly not fixed. And we're also aware of the CCWG proposal that wants the number to be higher. I think it's like 22. And so, as you know, as Foddy and Thomas look at the various participants, I imagine they're going to look at things like diversity, geographic distribution, whether all of the stakeholder groups are represented, and whether all the subject matter that is necessary for this particular review team is covered by the representatives on the review team. Because as you recall, this is covering a lot of areas. It's covering competition issues. It's covering consumer choice and consumer protection, intellectual property, security aspects, and obviously all of the new GTLD application processes. And so when you think about that from a holistic review team, you want to make sure that collectively there's representation of all those subject matters. So I'm sorry we can't be any more specific than that, but that's really because the affirmation of commitments doesn't have any prescribed number. And so that's why the endorsements are very helpful, because that will be fed into the process so that Foddy and Thomas can look at it and take that under consideration.
Thank you. I think this lays out our roadmap for the time until the next meeting. We have our work cut out for this. I don't think we will be able to answer this in this call, so I would like to push this to the next meeting unless there's any objections to that. Stephanie, I see your hand, but in the interest of time and the number of topics that we have in the last 5 minutes, I would like to ask you to put that into the chat so we can look at it there and respond at that point. We have the next item on our agenda, which is the issue report on the potential PDP on the new GTLDs. And this update can also be provided on the mailing list, the discussion that follows also there. We don't have to vote on anything here, so we would just be updated at this stage. I don't think we need to actually hear this read out. So, Steve, I thank you for attending, but alas, we don't have the time to discuss this. So I ask you for your understanding and would like to ask you to provide that update to us on the list in written form so we can react in that venue. Finally, before we come to any other business, we have a topic that we have scheduled 30 minutes for, and I would like to ask attendees to that are able to stay longer to use their time if they are interested in the question and answer session for the GNSL chair elections. So I will push this before any other business. We have the meeting calendar in any other business, which is also something that we should be able to discuss on list. There have been some concerns raised there, and while we could discuss them there, we simply do not have the time. The CWG stewardship letter with regards to the oversight of implementation, also something that's very important for us to do. In the interest of time, I would like to push this to the next meeting and the mailing list as well. So we have to have an action item list, I think, for going forward to just inform us next week what the topics are that we have to address on the list. And the last topic that was raised by Jolf, I'm afraid we cannot come to this as well, because we have 3 more minutes plus overtime for James, and whom I would now like to ask to provide his introduction, and then let's move into the Q&A in overtime. For those that have to leave at the top of the hour, thank you very much for the attention for your time. I think it has been a productive meeting. We've taken some more time than expected on the first motion, but I think it was well worth taking, and we've made some significant changes there. So I think we're in a good place, and now I hand over to James.
Thanks, Volker. And just quickly, I was going to offer that to be respectful of everyone's time, and that we're so far over our schedule, that the Q&A session, I would be happy to conduct that both either now or also carry that over onto the list if that is more convenient for some counselors who may have to drop. And then the second part of that is just to refer, because some of the new counselors may not have been available during the weekend sessions in Dublin, is just to refer back to the transcript where this was conducted previously, I believe on the Sunday, and just make sure that those materials were available to new counselors as well. Thanks.
Thank you, James. We still have 2 minutes of scheduled time. I see Paul McGrady in the queue. You have a question first, please.
Hi, this is Paul McGrady. Just a quick question. So and unfortunately I do need to go because of a prior commitment. Will we be voting on James today, or when does that occur, and how? Thank you.
Yes, the voting will occur, will start tomorrow because of the requirements of the bylaws, so we will not be voting today. Otherwise, we would have voted at the beginning of the session. I wouldn't have had to endure this entire presentation. No, it was fun. So the voting has to occur starting tomorrow, and it will run until Monday evening, UTC. So by the time the U.S. goes to bed, we will probably have a new chair, fingers crossed. Any other further questions for Jane at this stage? Seeing none. Yes, questions can be submitted on the list, Heather, but given that voting starts tomorrow, I would rather hear them here and now. But that shouldn't...
Just a note that I would be happy to answer questions while the ballot is still open as well. I understand the timing. I don't want anyone to feel like, you know...
Fully understood, James. And Heather, you're right. The timing is now very tight. I would be very reluctant to postpone the elections, but I think everybody can hold their vote until their question has been answered, so I think we're in a good place there as well. Now it's the top of the hour. We did not manage to make the entire schedule, the entire agenda as planned, but I think the topics that we have left on the agenda can be discussed offline, and maybe even in more detail than we would be able to do it here. So I thank you all for your time. It has been a pleasure to be an interim chair for the time being, together with David. It will also be a pleasure to hand over this duty to the next chair, hopefully next week. I thank you all for your time. Have a great evening, afternoon, or even morning if that's where you are. Looking forward to hear from you again and read from you on the list. Until the next time, goodbye.